from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in the rolling hills of central Pennsylvania all the way up to the Finger Lakes of New York State. There are dozens of bed and breakfasts, small inns catering to couples, small families, individual travelers. And while the federal government aims to make sure hotels have help in staying afloat, the small-scale hospitality business is in trouble. Monique Greenwood is the CEO of Aquaba Inns. She told CNBC this week that B&B as an industry is struggling and is going to soon be in critical condition. Greenwood has had to lay off half of her staff and refund deposits to guests who canceled their reservations due to the pandemic. And most B&Bs aren't running chains or with a CEO. The CEO is typically the owner, the innkeeper, also happens to be the house cleaner, the cook, the landscaper. There are small staffs, of course, and taken together, they are a significant part of the small business landscape. They're struggling. And this hour, a conversation about the realities they face. Can they survive the pandemic? Listeners, are you hoping to travel this year? Have you canceled any reservations? What would it take to make you feel comfortable again? Would you stay in B&Bs and hotels again? The confusing part of the B&B industry is kind of like the hotel industry. It's technically essential. They can welcome you now. But there are also hotels in phase three. How can you be essential and still in phase three? Well, the clarification we have is that the hospitality industry includes hotels, B&Bs, which are essential. They can be open now. But the reason they're also phase three is that opens up dine-in restaurants, spas, gyms, dine-in service. So our guests are going to tell us what they're doing and what they can and can't do now and what they hope to do this year. Let me welcome them now. Susan Alvarez is the co-owner of the Edward Harris House Bed and Breakfast. Susan, welcome. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Tell us where you are located, Susan.
We are in the heart of Rochester's historic district, Argyle Street in the Park Avenue area.
Well, it's great to have you back.
Where it's
with
all
us.
Happening.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Rosemary Janofsky. Rosemary is an innkeeper and proprietor of the Elwanger Estate. Rosemary, welcome.
Hi, Evan. Thank you for having me.
And tell us where you are.
I am at the Elwanger Estate Bed and Breakfast on Mount Hope, right in the historical walking district of Mount Hope and Highland Park.
Very good. Hello to Richard Trayford, co-owner of the Letchworth Farm Bed and Breakfast. Richard, welcome. How are you?
Thank you very much, Evan. I'm very well. And to describe us, we're on the edge of Letchworth State Park on the waterfall ends in a little town called Nunday.
Sounds awful.
pretty good.
I wish I were there. Robert St. John is an innkeeper at Sutherland House Bed and Breakfast. Robert, welcome. How are you?
Good afternoon, Evan. How are you?
Good.
We're hanging in there.
And where are you?
We are in Canandaigua, New York, just a mile outside of downtown Canandaigua.
Very good. Well, so I'm going to ask all four of you to start and just sort of lay out for us what the last couple of months have been like, what it has done to future accommodations, and frankly, you know, assuming you're all still open, at least in some capacity, what you're able to do and how it applies right now. I'll start with Richard Trayford at Letchworth Farm Bed and Breakfast. Go ahead, Richard.
Okay, so the best description I can give, and probably on behalf of everyone, is it was like a huge tide rolling in, only to roll right back out again. We had record numbers of bookings. It was all very exciting. I'd built new apartments on the farm, and we were good to go. And then the phone starts ringing with all the cancellations. So, yeah, very exciting at the early part of the year, and terrible as we got into April.
Okay, and has that then continued? Are you seeing any uptick in calls, interest, bookings, Richard?
Yeah, huge, actually. And certainly the public sort of confidence seems to be soaring back now. Either that or they're just tired of being cooped up. Because what we're seeing is the phone's now ringing. We are now getting quite busy. We're taking lots and lots of bookings. And again, my saving grace is I put two self-contained apartments on the farm. So people can have what we call nowadays enhanced distancing. They can check in online. They can call me on the phone. They don't even need to see me or hear me. So that allows us to put people safely in accommodation when needed, if they want to go to that extent, which is a sensible thing to do, obviously.
And Richard, we have been confused by the governor. He puts daily slides up. He's a PowerPoint guy, and that's a good thing. I mean, it's visual. But hotels are always under phase three, even though hotels are technically essential. And I think that that confused us. It probably confuses your potential customers. Is there anything that you're not allowed to do right now, Richard?
I think we're all as confused as you are, Evan. I mean, any politician right now, they're making it up as they go along. I can't really blame them for that. They've never dealt with a pandemic before. And so we're all making it up as we go along. We want to sound safe, but we don't really know what to do about it. In our case, it doesn't matter whether we're open or not. We're heavily dependent on tourism. So if people aren't traveling, if they're not out visiting Letcher Estate Park, they're certainly not going to stay with us. But what we are seeing again is the numbers creeping back into the park. A lot of last-minute, you know, panic calls. Hey, are you open? Can we come and stay with you? That kind of thing. So we're seeing a lot more activity, but we're not getting any real firm guidance from any of the political wings.
Can you serve breakfast?
Well, that's a difficult one. And we can, because the nice thing about our farmhouse, I mentioned we have two apartments, so stick those to the side a second, literally. The way we cope with that is we have sittings of no more than two, and we can keep them 12 feet apart. So as long as people want breakfast, I think we can confidently do it. We have everyone thoroughly clean their hands before and after breakfast. So if for any reason they share any item, whether it's a doorknob or a coffee cup, they're not going to be passing on anything or picking up anything. So that seems to be working. I mean, I think really the onus is on us, and I mean us, the whole business sector, to use common sense wherever possible and try and make it up the best we can as we go along. And that's what we're doing. So the answer is, yeah, when we need to, we can make a breakfast. We're wearing face masks and gloves and disinfecting ourselves between every seating, but we don't have high volume. So I feel terrible for the restaurant trade because 25% capacity is never going to work. They struggle at 100%. In our case, the breakfast is really a lost leader. So we don't need to have high volumes of people eating. Quite happy if they don't eat at all. So, yeah, we can work our way around that safely.
I'm laughing at the bluntness. I appreciate it.
Susan... Well, yeah, and I'm doing myself down, Evan, because I'm actually the breakfast chef. And with my funny accent, I do a full English breakfast. It's been a bit of a hit. But, you know, it's not something I forced on anyone now.
Boy, oh boy. I'll tell you what, if I stay at a bed and breakfast this year, I'm having breakfast. I'm just saying that.
It's all right. It's a deal.
you've been warned, Richard. Susan Alvarez, co-owner of the Edward Harris House at Bed and Breakfast. Can you give me a sense for the landscape on how the last 2 months has impacted you and what you're doing right now?
Sure. yes, it has impacted us a great deal. I would say probably a lot of what Richard said was probably the same case with us. But we have decided that after we had the whole onslaught of cancellations, you know, early on, like March, maybe beginning of March, that we were going to hold off bringing people in the house part, the inn, because we have an apartment upstairs that is, you know, freestanding. It doesn't have to be, you know, involved in the bed and breakfast part. So breakfast is up to them right now. And then we have two cottages, which have kind of kept us afloat as well. And those are freestanding as well. So we don't have to worry about that. But, yeah, it's been a very confusing time. You know, at one point somebody would say, well, you're not supposed to be open. Then somebody else would say, yes, you can be open. And I'm like, okay. So it's a little confusing out there.
Well, let me just say, Susan, I pride myself in being pretty well informed. I mean, I don't have many skills in life. It's the one thing I have to do. And the governor has been a very good daily communicator. But when he puts hotels in phase three on the daily slide, it is confusing. And I think it's understandably confusing for your customers. But you're open. And again, we're stressing to listeners, I can say this pretty confidently, as strange as it sounds, ignore hotels under phase three on the daily slide from the governor. You can book in a hotel and you can book in a B&B. They are open, and they're not breaking the law, and they're not scoff laws there. Susan, what does the typical month, for example, of June look like in a non-pandemic, and what does it look like for you right now?
Well, in a non-pandemic, it's extremely high volume of people that are coming through. And we have a very strong European and South American clientele that comes in, but they can't get here. So that's been a bit of a problem. They don't know when they're going to be able to travel easily, and I don't think they want to right now, the ones that I've spoken to. We have pushed back a lot of our clients, you know, into the fall, but then they say that the fall may be another really bad time. So between that and our brides that are trying to get married, and, you know, it's just hard for everybody.
Sure.
There's no easy answer to this one.
Rosemary Janofsky, the innkeeper and proprietor of the Ellwanger Estate. What have the last 2 months been like for you?
Paralyzing. Absolutely. It's a showstopper. So what we've done is we don't pivot because there's nothing to pivot on. We've rethought and rewired and rebalanced. And this is a very small property of 4 to 5 rooms and 7,000 square feet. So the few reservations I have for June, they are renting a room, yet renting a whole mansion plus 3.5 acres. What a luxury in the middle of the city. So we do have that, and a private garden owned by the Landmark Society. Pretty much people are self-selecting, which created, you know, a lot of cancellations. In the last week, though, I've had 3 that have moved their reservations and have maintained their security deposit down on it, which was very kind. So that helps. And we do small weddings, elopements, and it's very difficult to find a place that will do an elopement for 2 to 10 people. And so I have gotten quite a few calls in the last week about that alone.
It sounds to me, Rosemary, tell me if I'm wrong then, that number one, you're the definition of physical distancing, four rooms and 7,000, just a huge space. But it sounds like it's possible that this year that the B&B circuit will see people who are seeking perhaps to travel as a group and kind of book an entire place, if they book all the rooms, if they all know each other, or I mean, is that possible?
That is possible. For the first month, I'll do 50% capacity, which is 2 rooms, 4 people. And then as things go on, I can have up to 10. And they still have plenty of room to distance themselves. It's a very rare property where you will not see each other if you choose to go to the rec room, which is an outside potting shed with a pool table, or if you choose to go to the garden, which is, you know, you've got 3.5 acres here. So it's really quite an amazing place. So, yes, I would take a group like that. And I think this year, when it's all said and done, it will be a banner year to finish. However, I have canceled everything larger than 10 in a group for the next 12 months starting today. So there will be no large groups here. I am expecting a second and a third wave.
Mm. For you, has there been any confusion about whether you can serve breakfast?
People come here for the breakfast. No confusion. I have added on room service at my expense. No worries, because I want them to have that breakfast. Everything is sanitized. I make the breakfast. I am the owner, the innkeeper, the bottle washer, the chef, the gardener, you name it. And so I will not compromise breakfast. However, there is some changes. And now they will get a menu and they can self-select what they'd like. Because if I'm going to offer room service or offer al fresco dining on the veranda, then I want it to be contained and not more than they can possibly eat, because I still have to get it to them and that sort of thing. So we have a dining room, we have the porch, the veranda, the room, and then when evening comes, if they want to order out, that's fine, and I will make sure they have their appropriate utensils and napkinware and go from there so they can still eat.
We're talking to bed and breakfast owners, innkeepers, proprietors, and listeners. I will betray my own bias here. I have a great affection for this industry. I think there is tremendous art and skill and grace to what generally speaking, for me at least, has been almost uniform good experiences in bed and breakfast across the country and here in New York City. It's one of my favorite things to do to explore. And so the question is, you know, what happens to this industry in a pandemic, especially when there's been all these cancellations and all this uncertainty? If you're confused about why the governor puts hotels in phase three and his daily slide, it could be, I'm told, it could be because some hotels have full-service restaurants and spas attached, which would fall under phase three. So you might actually encounter big hotels that are open as essential, but their full-service restaurant can't open until phase three. That could be the case. That's not the case with B&Bs. Bed and breakfasts are open, and they are essential, and you can book with them now. Robert St. John, innkeeper at Sutherland House Bed and Breakfast, can you paint the picture for the last 2 months for you?
It's very dull. well, we have five rooms at our home, 5,500 square feet. We sit on a little over 5 acres, which is great for us. We've had a lot of cancellations. We actually decided to close for early April through mid-March, mid-March through late April, and we just received our first guest last week. So business is down tremendously. I know everybody was talking about the breakfasts, and you know, that's one of the things. My wife does all the cooking. I just do whatever she tells me to do. But she does all the cooking. She serves a 3-course breakfast, and that all had to be changed around because of the COVID. She still does the 3 courses, but it's not like it used to be. We offer a couple of different things if the people don't feel uncomfortable, if the customers feel or the guests feel uncomfortable sitting at a table with anybody else, even though they're 6 feet apart. We have the 2 patios outside that we could serve outside, and we have 2 dining rooms. So we have plenty of space to separate the people if they want. But if they didn't want the full breakfast, my wife can make them up a simple tray, you know, a fresh fruit, yogurt, hard-boiled egg, and she does usually some kind of baked good for breakfast. And if they don't want that, then they can, you know, decide if they want to go out or anything like that. Robert, where we're at, yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, no, listen, I don't want to cut into you describing the food because this is all making me want to travel. and you used the word dull. Is there hope that as we move into the summer season, as we hope to see a continuing good news when it comes to ICU hospitalizations, deaths and overall hospitalizations, rate of infection, is there hope that it won't necessarily be a dull or even devastating summer or fall, that this could pick back up for you?
We're hoping that it does. You know, fortunately, we live in an area, you know, within no more than an hour's drive from Canandaigua. There's about 100 different wineries. People come for the wineries. There's a CMAC amphitheater, and we just found out the other day that everything for CMAC, all of the venues have been canceled. You know, and then we have Rochester, we have the Corning Glass Factory. So people come to the area so that they have some place to go. And I know somebody else had mentioned that, you know, who wants to pack up their bags? And some may want to, but who wants to pack up their bags to go to an area where they really can't go and enjoy the area for what it has to offer? That's the hard part.
Yeah, and I think in the warm months, you know, maybe what we're finding out is that we can enjoy a little bit more of what we feared we couldn't a month or two ago. You know, I don't know. We're in process, and a lot of it will depend on when the different phases roll out and if we sort of behave societally well enough not to see massive resurgences of infection. But Robert, and I'll ask all four of you this, and I'll kind of go back around the panel here. You know, this may be the day trip economy year as opposed to full tourism that we're used to. Robert, do you have a best guess at Sutherland House? What percentage of your annual guests are within maybe one tank of a drive or less versus, you know, out-of-region tourists?
We get quite a few people that come from the Rochester, Syracuse, Buffalo, Canada area. even parts of Pennsylvania, which are still within an hour.
Ohio, Canada.
Yeah.
He said within an hour. But so, you know, those guests, as a matter of fact, the couple that stayed with us, they came from just outside of Buffalo area. So those guests, we would expect, if they want to just get away, and a lot of them that come from those areas just want to get away for a night or a two night. You know, normally we have a two night minimum on the weekends, and we've kind of had to adjust that, as you know, for the summertime. And we've had to adjust that because we don't want to lose the business. So if somebody wants to come and stay, they come and stay. But what we have to keep in mind is we have to make sure that we re-sanitize that room, and we won't use that room for at least 24 to 48 hours again. So it's going to cut down on the amount of rooms that we would have available if people want to come in for the one night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, talk about the sanitizing and all that stuff, and somebody else had mentioned it. The guidelines are just all over the place, and it's very hard for us to make sure that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing when the guidelines are just so confusing from different aspects that you hear from, you know, from the federal government. So we're probably going above and beyond what we need to, but we'd rather do that to keep our guests safe as well as ourselves.
Fair enough. Rosemary Janofsky, do you have a general sense of what percentage your guests are local-ish, regional versus out of region?
90%. I have East Coast and then Ontario, Canada, and then Ohio. It's kind of a horseshoe shape. And they are a lot of them are return. What I have done is, because of the requirements for sanitation, and I used to do these. I do it all the time. Think OCD. I am on top of it. I've just put a new layer on top of that. So I have required a two-night stay so I can cater to their needs, have an enjoyable time. One night is far too quick to spend in this area, and so they can combine their business with their pleasure and enjoy the area that way.
But when you say 90%, that's, I guess, regional? I mean, how do you define it?
One tank of gas.
Yeah, one tank. Yeah,
90%. One tank. So you're talking about all the way from New York City down to Maryland, Virginia, and then on the west, you go to Ohio, huge population from Ohio. And then the north, we have a lot of people coming from Toronto. So one tank of gas will get you here, and that's 90% of my clientele. Very local.
Could you envision an even more local, as in within state boundaries, carrying you for this year?
I can. As you know, this is a secret garden here. And this program and getting out in the neighborhood has really put the Al Wenger State on the map as far as local goes. I mean, I'm talking about just Rochesterians who are coming out and want to have a special outing, a staycation, anniversary celebration, and they'll come here. And it's more evident now as the reservations are coming back in. They're very local.
Susan Alvarez, co-owner of the Edward Harris House Bed and Breakfast. Mm-hmm. What kind of breakdown do you tend to see in terms of where your clientele is coming from?
Well, we also have the same type of people coming in from the local area you always have. However, we have developed a bigger, two segments, which would be people that are coming from way far away, whether it's, you know, coming to the Eastman School of Music or, you know, a lot of different reasons for that. So that's a good portion of our business. And the other one is the small wedding, small functions that, you know, we rely on. And that, of course, is usually local, although we have a lot of brides that we've moved, I think I mentioned, all to the fall. So mm-hmm. We're hoping for the best to make sure that they feel comfortable, that we feel comfortable, that everybody, all of my vendors feel comfortable. It's very complicated.
Yeah, I imagine. I imagine all of this is complicated. Richard Trayford, co-owner of Letchworth Farm Bed and Breakfast, what's the breakdown for you?
Well, if you'd have asked me 4 months ago, I'd have said 30% plus international, literally as far away as China, India, Israel, you name it, and obviously a huge percentage like it. previous speaker said, from Europe, not now. But I don't think that's necessarily bad news. Without gloating, we're fully booked this weekend. We're an 88-acre horse farm as well, I should confess. So we breed a lot of high-end horses, and people tend to be attracted to that as well, particularly if they've got daughters. And so we tend to be quite busy. But what we've seen is a complete change around. Obviously, zero international traffic. There's a plus side to that. My mother-in-law won't be visiting this summer. that was a joke. She's wonderful. But I had to put that in. Sorry, guys. But the reality is, I think for all of us, there's a benefit here. We're going to see a huge uptick of people that are not going abroad. So people in that one gas tank area, I had someone actually call say, I was going to Turkey. I'm going to come to you instead. I said, well, that's no pressure then, is it? You know, you're going to come to a farm in Nunday. But they had a great time. And so there's going to be a benefit to this. Of course, we can all think, oh, my God, no international influx of visitors, but then no outflux of visitors either. People, I'm seeing it already. I think if I said we were full this weekend, they're all less than a gas tank away.
And
so,
real,
yeah, we've got to prepare for that.
Yeah, so I guess realistically, Richard, if you have this big chunk of the business that comes internationally and outside of region, can you... If this is a pandemic that goes into next year, maybe even into the heart of next year, can you replace all of that business with that localish, the people who said, I was going to go to Turkey, I was going to go to California, I'm coming to you instead? Could that replace all of it, you think?
Definitely. Definitely. Because not only will we have the consistent pattern of local traffic, but there'll be an uptick in that because there'll be, as I said, more people wanting to go less far away. I've had marathon runners run to this farm to stay for a weekend, literally without a vehicle. so we are used to seeing people within a certain, you know, local and further afield. But I think, again, we're going to see many, many more people who are just not comfortable with getting on an airplane, just not comfortable with mass transit or going to busy cities anymore, sadly. And so they're going to come to all of the fine establishments that are on this program right now. And there's world-class ones. There's one that's one of the top 10 in North America. So I commend you. You know, you are fantastic job. and so we've got the quality in this area. We've certainly got the destinations like Letchworth State Park, which is, I mean, my guests are saying they're going in there. It's really, really busy right now. So people are coming out, and they're just not going as far away. So we can cash in on that. We can provide a great service to local people. The people who are listening to this show, they should all go and stay in every one of these B&Bs because they're going to have a fantastic time.
You know, Richard, my friend Jake, who is British, says that Americans give British people the British credit, which is, you know, we assume based on your accent that you're more witty and intelligent just based on that, having no knowledge if you actually are. And the problem is you actually are.
You know what we are? We're a nation of butlers. And so if I can't cook you a decent breakfast, put me back on a plane and send me home.
Oh, boy. We're enjoying this Friday afternoon. And in all seriousness, our guests, all four of our guests, representing a large industry, and there are so many bed and breakfasts throughout this region that have really been hurting the last couple of months. A lot of cancellations. And just dealing with the fact that people are maybe a little bit concerned about travel. And top on that with the confusion of whether hotels and bed and breakfasts are even allowed to be open. And the answer is they are. They are open. They're open now. And you can book now. They're not in a further or later phase. They are considered essential. And so there's nothing wrong with being open now. But in our second half hour, let's get a quick break. We've got some questions from listeners and some comments from listeners about what they're willing to do or questions they may have before they're willing to travel and stay at different accommodations. And we will pose them for our guests. And if you want to call the program, are you willing to travel? Have you canceled reservations? Would you book now? 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I'm Evan Dawson. On Monday, it's Memorial Day. And we, of course, honor the sacrifices that so many Americans have made over the years. We appreciate them, we think about them, and we hold them in our memory on Monday. Connections is back with you live on Tuesday. We'll have special programming on Monday for you. And if you're out celebrating or at least enjoying the weather, we hope you do it safely, and we'll talk with you on Tuesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Michael writes to say, I would feel safer in a small B&B, say in the Finger Lakes region, rather than a larger hotel. I'm in no hurry to fly anywhere, and even a free cruise wouldn't be enough to get me on a cruise ship now. That is from Michael. So let me ask our guests, I know you've got a bias here, but realistically, Richard, do you think it is reasonable to say that if I'm going to stay somewhere, a B&B is more likely to be safe than a hotel right now? Richard?
Yeah, in many ways, as the other speakers have mentioned, they're the chief cook and bottle washer. They're the ones going around with disinfectant and gloves on and masks on, and they're doing a thorough job. If you were the Hilton Group, no disrespect to them whatsoever, very, very hard when you're managing. So I've run multi-site businesses. It's very, very hard to manage your staff at that level. Secondly, we're all about statistics now, and statistically, low volume, low numbers of people, low groupings of people, is the obvious way to go. A cruise ship is almost sadly the exact opposite, contained high volume of people. We are, everyone on this show has got 3, 5, in our case, 88 acres of space for people to roam around, not to mention the thousands of acres of Letchworth Park. Very, very hard to get within 6 feet of people in the average B&B. So, yes, it's got to be safer, hasn't it?
I realistically think so. Again, I'm not trying to disparage any industry. Susan, though, what do you think?
I think that basically that is the way to go, and it always really has been. We've been doing this 20 years, and I think that we had our fingers on the pulse here trying to figure out what's important to people, and that is at the top of the list. And if you see some of the reviews that come through, it always mentions it. It's a very, very clean environment. You know, it's very important to us, but it's also very important, and even more so now, to our guests.
Rosemary Janofsky, what do you think?
A bed and breakfast isn't for everyone. However, those that say that usually say it because they're not into the shared dining experience over breakfast. However, now things are rewired, rebalanced, rethought out with the distancing, the options for porch, veranda, room service, dining area that's private for two. I think people might revisit the bed and breakfast. Personally, I might not want to share a table with 10 other people even prior to this. Maybe I'd like an intimate room where I could have just the two of us. So I would implore people to explore this option as a very safe, very catered to your needs option of staying at a accommodation. Also, usually your bed and breakfast are going to actually have the finger on the pulse. They're going to cater to your needs far better than and again, like Richard said, no disrespect to all the hotels that are doing a marvelous job. It's just hard when you have so much in the way of staffing to control the little fine touches, the luxuries, the personal preferences. So, yes, I would ask everybody to rethink their preference on a bed and breakfast. Give it a try. At least try it once.
Okay. Robert St. John.
Oh, we've had, we've been fortunate. We've had quite a few people that have never stayed at the bed and breakfast that stayed with us, and they were amazed with the experience that they, and the service that they received when they stayed because they had never stayed before. People may be more inclined to stay at a smaller property with less people, than the larger hotels, which makes a bed and breakfast perfect. We have the ability to tailor their stay, provide more personalized service than a large hotel. We have better protocols because we are smaller for dining and taking care of our guests. And we personally, my wife and I, and we only have one employee, we personally do all the cleaning and the cooking, right here.
All right. Well, some feedback from listeners. Jared says, I sure would be willing to book at a bed and breakfast this year. I'd love to hit the Finger Lakes at some point. Bethany says, it depends on if I was able to rent the entire place or just a room and suite versus shared and shared bathrooms. That can be a challenge, I know, particularly now. Robert St. John, I'll ask all four of you briefly. Does bathrooms present any sort of an additional challenge during this pandemic for guests for you?
Not for us. All of the rooms have their own individual bathrooms. They have as well as either a shower. Some have a. We have three that have a jacuzzi tub. The house is available. We have rented it several times, the whole house, to a group of people. So we don't have any. We don't have any problems with that.
Okay, Rosemary Janofsky.
Private baths, that's the way to go, all the way around. And I have had people come saying, you know, there's just four of us, and we just like to take over the whole house. And they've done it, and it's been brilliant. And they have room to spread out, and it's worked really well.
Yeah, and Rosemary, do you sense that for the bed and breakfast that that do have shared bathrooms, it's going to be more challenging to book this year?
Absolutely. However, I know of only one in town, and the cry out is for private, luxurious baths in each room. So I suspect that's not totally of the past, but it is going away. Most people, when they think of bed and breakfast, who have not tried them, think of shared baths, which is another showstopper. So, that would definitely come into play.
Okay. Susan Alvarez?
Well, we definitely have, each one has their own bathroom, and we've been that way since the get-go, which, like I said, was 20 years ago. So there are a lot of things have changed in those times, but we just keep changing with the times and keep going. And, you know, we're 6,000 square feet. She's got 1,000 on us, but there's plenty of room for people to move around. And, you know, using their own bathroom is very important to Americans. Very important.
I have never been in a bed and breakfast that felt cramped. I will say that. Never in my life. Richard Trayford, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I just comment as a foreigner that it's important to everybody now. I mean, a lot of our international business is pretty high end, you know. Then the clientele that we all get at bed and breakfast is not people looking for a cheap place to stay or a flop house. They're actually looking for a boutique experience. Ours is an 1890 farmhouse. Every room fully ensuite. Our apartments have their own kitchens as well as full baths and bathrooms. One of ours actually has a separate room with a bathtub, a separate room with a WC, and a separate room with a two-person shower. So that's what people expect from a bed and breakfast now. The old stigma as a place that was simply sold on price is long gone. B&Bs are fine places to stay with fine dining. And I think all of these on today's show represent that. I know we do.
So as we look forward now, you know, given what we saw on CNBC this week, the conversation they had with some industry leaders and bed and breakfast owners and the concern about the current state of bookings and the need to see a rebound and the margins, I guess I'll ask all four of you if you think that we're likely to be sitting here 12 months from now talking about significant closures in your industry. I mean, 6 years ago on Connections, we had a lovely roundtable conversation about what it would take if our listeners wanted to start in bed and breakfast. It's sort of one of those kind of pipe dreams for a lot of people when they think about, you know, someday I want to do that. And, you know, I think at the time, and I couldn't find this research for today, so I'm not positive it's right, but I think at the time the average length of time that a bed and breakfast would stay open was about 7 years. Obviously, there's a lot of fluctuation, variation, but it has been a dream for people. Well, right now, just imagine you were planning to open a bed and breakfast this spring or this summer. I mean, it would just be sort of a nightmare, let alone trying to keep the margins up, stay in business, survive past the pandemic. Richard, realistically, do you think the industry will see more closures than normal in the next 12 months?
Well, as your president rather sarcastically said about the restaurant trade, the restaurants will still be here, maybe with different owners. Sadly, that may apply to the bed and breakfast industry as well. I think most of us know that when you buy a bed and breakfast, we created one, this one wasn't, but typically when you buy a bed and breakfast, you're buying a job. A lot of the people who buy bed and breakfast are in their 50s plus. It's a kind of, final job for them, frankly, before they retire. So that probably explains the seven-year innings.
There will be a lot of closures.
You know, so yeah, people will be closing anyway over time. But yeah, I think all of us are probably somewhat seasonal as well. I don't know if any of us are near ski resorts or what have you. We can see one from the farm. But we don't get a lot of traffic in the winter. So all the talk now is reopening around late fall. That's no good for any of us. That's the end of our season. So we need to be active now. And the answer is, yes, there's going to be victims. Of course there are in every industry sector, but particularly the accommodation, anything that's linked to travel and tourism.
Hmm. Susan Alvarez, what do you think?
Well, I think that probably the ones of us that have been around for a while may decide that retirement looks, pretty good to them at this point. But I'm with you guys. I think that they will be replaced by another 50-year-old couple or, something like that. And I think that the people that actually do well in this business are people. they're people that want to be around other people and serve and, that kind of thing. So I think there's always going to be somebody that looks at this and says, wow, I'd really like to do that. And there's room for them, even with Airbnb and, all the different things that are happening right now. There's always, I think, going to be somebody that, wants to grab that torch and keep running.
Rosemary, what do you think?
I'm still a young one. I've only been open for 11 years. And I remember the day open, my father sent me an article. So, what 17 hours of the day would you like to work? Well, and how many guests I have, they come and say, oh, you have a dream job. We would love to open a bed and breakfast. Well, I still mentor hospitality students from the from MCC. They have a wonderful hospitality program. So it was a bit challenging when we had New York on pause. We had to reinvent the internship, and we did it from afar, which was brilliant. She was able to, make masks and develop brochures and help me write my newsletter, and it was great. But yes, I can see where some will say this is my final act. I'm not there yet. I don't see that happening. I can operate on a margin, not well though. But I don't think I'll have to. I see that, as Richard said, reservations are picking up now. And I think this summer, the end of the summer, will be very good.
All right. Robert St. John, what do you think?
Well, I thought I was in my golden years because I am retired. And we're just here 5 years. And we, being new to the industry, it was kind of hard to visualize, and we really had no idea on what it would take to be an innkeeper. But since we have done it, it is a lot of work. But you cannot put a price tag on the amount, on the people that you meet and the friends that you make that come and stay with us. We're people. We love being around people, and we love hearing stories and where they're from and where they're going. We're going to be here. We're not planning on going anyplace.
Others may not.
Others may not be. The hard part about all of that would be is if somebody decides that they want to get out of the business and this pandemic is still hanging around, it's going to be tough to sell a bed and breakfast. I really believe that would be tough unless somebody really just wants to do it and has enough money to survive this, depending on how long it lasts. But we're not planning on going anyplace. We love doing it. We love meeting the guests. And that's kind of with all this COVID stuff now, it's kind of taking a step back. You can speak to them and talk to them, but you don't want to really hang around too much because you don't know how comfortable you might be making them.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it's tough.
You know,
Well,
it's a tough situation.
I'm glad to hear that our guests are really determined to kind of stay through this. And I think Robert's making an important point here. If there are forced closures, selling property may be very difficult during this time, too. So that could be kind of doubly difficult for people in the industry if the next 12 months are really, really hard. And as we get ready to wrap the week here, you know, it's a beautiful day. People are thinking about getting out, and we need a little bounce in our step. And I would like, if you could do it about in a minute apiece, I'd love for you to tell me a story. And it could be guests from anywhere in the world, because we're not always going to be confined the way we are. This isn't forever. Rosemary Janofsky, what's a story in a minute or less that sums up why you love doing what you're doing?
I had a gentleman come here. He was being wooed by the University of Rochester. He wasn't certain if he was going to take the job, but every time he came back to this bed and breakfast. And one day, outside of the dining room, he was sitting by himself. There goes a red-tailed fox. No matter that his last name happened to be Fox, he said, "Okay, sealed the deal. I'm taking it, and I'm telling everybody, if they don't stay at the Alwanger, they're missing the Rochester experience." He has been my greatest fan. So, you know, hats off to him, and I really enjoyed knowing that it meant so much to him and that he took the job.
What a great story. Richard Trayford.
Well, I'm going to sound selfish, because to me, the pleasure is what we receive from our guests. I think we've all mentioned this. If you are a people person, I am. I was a CEO of a company in New York City eons ago, and I loved the vibe of being in Manhattan. Well, now, my dad was a dairy farmer. I breed horses. I'm in the middle of nowhere, really, but a wonderful part of nowhere. And now I get these amazing people. I had a chap walk through the door. We're on a radio show today, a great radio station, by the way. And a chap walked through the door from India. He was being interviewed by the BBC World Service while he was on his cell phone as he walked through the door. He was an expert on Kashmiri politics. And if we follow that, we'll know there's a bit of trouble out there right now. And he was being interviewed. His wife, from Delhi as well, was a professor of Shakespeare. And I had the most marvelous time with them. We took them to dinner. You never know who's going to walk through the door. And I like to talk, arguably too much. It's fantastic listening to everyone else's story. So I can't narrow it down to one group or one person. They're all amazing. We attract, in our industry, amazing people.
Love it. Susan Alvarez.
Well, this goes back a little ways, but it's one of my favorite times, so I'll tell you about it. We had four young ladies that were coming from New York City and didn't know why, didn't tell me why. They got here, and they happened to be the first, second, third, and fourth of the Phantom of the Opera. It was the young ladies that are the ballerinas and the singers. And I did not know this until they got here. And they spent about, I want to say it was a four-week run maybe with them. And I had the pleasure of their personalities and their gifts and, you know, their little dancers and their being little dancers in my foyer, and it was the most wonderful experience that I don't think that I would have realized in any other business. And they've stayed in touch, and they're still on Broadway, and it goes back maybe 5-6 years. That's but wonderful. that was my favorite group.
Wonderful. What a great story. And Robert St. John.
Well, I can tell you that what we really enjoy are our guests. The new ones that come in, the first-timers that come in, the experience that they tell us that they've had by staying with us. But most importantly is the returning guest. We have a couple that has been, Sutherland House has been a bed and breakfast for over 30 years. And we have a couple that comes every year, been coming here every year for 20 years, takes the same room every time they come, and stays for the same amount of time when they do come. And it's just enjoyable. And they come twice a year. They usually come in the spring, and they usually come in the fall.
I love the fact that you all have repeat guests, because as someone who loves B&Bs, I always think if I go back to a place I've been, I missed a chance to go somewhere new, and it's always a wrestle with myself. But that means that you all have lovely service, and all four of you have repped the industry beautifully. So as we close the program, let me remind our listeners, bed and breakfasts are open. Hotels are open. I know you occasionally may see the governor's slides on what phase is what and hotels land in phase three. What he really means is hotels that have full-service bars and spas, those parts of the hotel can't open until phase three. But overnight accommodations, bed and breakfast, they're open and ready for you if you want to do that. The four today are four of many. Letchworth Farm Bed and Breakfast, Edward Harris House Bed and Breakfast, the Elwanger Estate, and Sutherland House Bed and Breakfast. And I hear birds chirping because, of course, I do. You are all in such beautiful places. So Richard, Susan, Rosemary, and Robert, thank you so much for taking an hour of your afternoon for us. And here's to good luck for you throughout this tough season. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Evan. It's been a pleasure.
Just lovely.
Bye-bye.
What a beautiful way to end our week. I hope you're all having as good a weekend as you can. I know we're all in different circumstances. I hope you're lifting each other up. You're thinking about who in particular is hurting, maybe who needs a phone call or a window visit or just a chance to say hello. I hope it's a great one for you this weekend. And from the whole team here, Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer, I'm Evan Dawson. We will talk to you soon on Member Supported Public Radio.